Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Oscar Pistorius is found guilty of culpable homicide. A report says thousands died this year in the Central African Republic. I'm Dave DeForest reporting from Washington. South African track star Oscar Pistorius has been found guilty of culpable homicide but cleared of a more serious charge of murder in connection with the killing of his girlfriend. The judge in the case delivered the verdict today. Prosecutors had argued Pistorius acted intentionally when he shot model Reva Steenkamp at his Pretoria house last year, but Pistorius maintained he thought he was firing at a nighttime intruder. The head of the World Health Organization says more and better trained medical workers are needed in West Africa to stop the growing outbreak of Ebola. Dr. Margaret Chan spoke at a news conference in Geneva today.
In the three hardest hit countries, Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, the number of new cases is moving far faster than the capacity to manage them in Ebola-specific treatment centers.
Chen said the death toll from Ebola has climbed past 2,400, and the total number of cases has risen to 4,784. The Reuters news agency reports that Rwandan singer Kizito Mihigo and three other people appeared in court today facing charges of conspiring against the government. One of the others is a journalist, which has brought expressions of concern from the organization Reporters Without Borders. The prosecution accuses the four of plotting with the opposition group Rwanda National Congress to attack the government. Mihigo's lawyer says the singer is innocent, but none of the four entered pleas in court Friday. This is VOA News. According to the Associated Press, more than 5,000 people have been killed in the Central African Republic since December in violence between Muslims and Christians. An enhanced regional peacekeeping force is poised to come under United Nations control next week, and UN spokesman Stefan Dujarric says the deployment will be difficult.
We're dealing with an extremely, extremely complicated logistical situation. CAR, as you well know, is landlocked, has very little in terms of transport infrastructure.
The high death toll from sectarian violence in the CAR this year indicates the upgraded mission is coming too late to help thousands of people. Many believe the AP casualty figure of 5,000 is much lower than the actual death total. The Reuters news agency quotes local residents as saying Nigerian government forces fought with Islamic insurgents today outside the Borno state capital of Maiduguri. They say the government was trying to prevent an attack on the city by the Boko Haram militant group. Secretary of State John Kerry is announcing nearly $500 million in additional U.S. aid for those affected by Syria's civil war. Kerry made the announcement today in Turkey, where he is trying to build international support for the fight against Islamic State extremists in Syria and Iraq.
We have concerns with respect to what's happening from Libya to Mali, to the Horn of Africa, and throughout the Middle East, and of course, now, the events in Iraq. So we have a great deal to talk about.
During the talks Thursday in Saudi Arabia, Turkish officials declined to endorse a U.S.-led plan for defeating the militants. 10 Arab nations did join the coalition. The European Union has imposed a new package of economic sanctions against Russia because of its actions in Ukraine. The new sanctions went into effect today and target Russian oil and defense firms. The Australian government has raised its terrorist threat level to high, the second highest level, on concerns about threats from domestic Islamic State supporters. Here is Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott.
There are people with the intent and the capability to mount attacks here in Australia. Our security agencies have raised the threat level based on an accumulation of indicators.
He said the terrorist threat level in Australia has been rising over the past year. Firebrand unionist leader and former First Minister of Northern Ireland, Ian Paisley, has died. Paisley was 88 years old. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight...
It's really hampering efforts. The conditions in those countries, the closure of the borders and all these things, is not helping. So we try to use some creative ways by driving by road, which is costly, takes time, and of course, it doesn't help anybody.
That's Alassane Senghor of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies. He's talking about the difficulty getting humanitarian aid to countries hit by Ebola. Details coming up. Also in the news, a South African judge has found track star Oscar Pistorius guilty of culpable homicide for shooting his girlfriend last year. And the Nigerian military confirms that Islamist Boko Haram rebels are within striking distance of Maiduguri in Borno State. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Guinea remains on alert as fresh cases of Ebola continue to appear in new areas. It's a worrying setback as the situation was seen to be stabilizing in Guinea after nearly 6 months of a response. Karim Kamara reports from Conakry.
9 previously unaffected towns in Guinea are now reporting cases of Ebola, including the towns of Kerawani in Upper Guinea, Masantan in the south, and Forikaria and Koya in Lower Guinea. Koya is 50 kilometers from the capital Conakry, which also has new cases. Guinean authorities blame the resurgence on Ebola patients crossing into Guinea from Sierra Leone and Liberia, the two countries hardest hit by the regional outbreak. In an address to the nation, President Alpha Conde said Ebola had been on the verge of being eradicated in Guinea, but started re-emerged in border towns. He says, we had almost come to an end. We had wanted to close the treatment center in Conakry when an Ebola patient from both Sierra Leone arrived. He says the problem is that Liberia and Sierra Leone are still emerging from conflict and don't have good health infrastructures. He says you must keep it in mind that if there is even a single case remaining in Liberia, we are not safe. He says we need to fight our own cases and those in Liberia and Sierra Leone. Guinea is rolling out new measures to stop the spread of the disease. National Ebola Coordinator Dr. Sako Baketa says they are opening 16 transit centers for suspected cases across the nation and 2 more treatment units for confirmed cases. He says the treatment unit in Conakry will remain. He says in Gigedu and Masantan, both in the southeast of the country, we want to put in place modern treatment centers so that patients can be cared for close to their homes. He says all prefectures near the borders with Sierra Leone and Liberia will get Ebola transit center, even those in areas not affected by the virus. He says these new measures will last for 2 months and will cost $11 million. The regional Ebola outbreak began in southern Guinea early this year. It has killed at least 494 people in Guinea, including 25 health workers. President Conde announced this week that the family of each deceased health worker will receive $10,000 in death benefits. Karim Kamara for VOA News, Conakry.
The United Nations Children's Fund reports the Ebola crisis in Liberia is having a devastating health, psychological, and social impact on children. UNICEF warns the deadly Ebola outbreak is threatening to wipe out all the hard-earned gains for children in the country. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
When Liberia emerged from years of civil war in 2003, the under-5 child mortality rate stood at 110 per 1,000 live births. The UN Children's Fund reports that number decreased to 75 per 1,000 live births by 2012, the highest rate of decline in child mortality in Africa. That is only one of a number of gains made in children's health that UNICEF says is now threatened by the historic Ebola crisis raging throughout the country. The UN agency reports Ebola has severely disrupted the country's health system. As a consequence, it says children are once again dying from measles and other vaccine-preventable diseases. It notes Ebola patients occupy most of the available hospital beds, leaving few places for women to safely deliver their babies. UNICEF Crisis Communications Chief Sarah Crowe is currently on a mission in Liberia. Speaking by telephone from the capital, Monrovia, she tells journalists in Geneva the impact of the Ebola crisis upon children is very grave.
Children are seeing their family members and relatives taken away by people in effectively astronaut suits and looking like crop sprayers. And the effect of this is deeply distressing for children. Children who have been exposed to the virus are facing deep stigma, and nobody wants to take them on because there's this terrible psychosis of fear around the Ebola virus.
Many children have lost one or two parents to this disease. Crowe says UNICEF is looking for innovative ways to give orphaned and other Ebola-affected children the care, nurture, and attention they need. One method, she says, is to have people who have survived Ebola look out for these children during the critical 21-day incubation period. It is raining heavily in Liberia right now. Crowe says children throughout the rainy season will be exposed to high levels of malaria, pneumonia, and diarrhea.
Children are not getting the attention they need. This will also affect malnutrition in the longer term. Schools are closed, so children are living in, this very sort of twilight zone where they're not able to touch and play with others as they used to, but of course they're children and they do.
UNICEF reports children account for 22% of Ebola cases, men 25%, and women more than 50%. The Liberian Ministry of Health reports 75% of Ebola deaths are among women. Health officials note that women are the main caregivers in their family, so they are particularly vulnerable to becoming infected and dying from the disease. Latest World Health Organization estimates put the number of Ebola cases at 4,784 with 2,400 deaths, nearly half in Liberia. WHO says these figures are most certainly underestimated. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
African countries have closed borders and international airlines have cut flights to West Africa in response to the ongoing Ebola outbreak. As Christian Robbie reports from Dakar, these measures are delaying the delivery of humanitarian aid and could hurt the West African airline sector despite recent growth.
Senegal and Ivory Coast have closed their airports to planes coming from Ebola-affected countries, and many airlines have cut services to the capitals of Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. The World Health Organization says this is not the answer to containing Ebola, since the risk of transmitting the disease during a flight is quite low. The virus cannot be transferred from one person to another through the air by coughing, for example, but only from contact with blood or other body fluids. Still, the airlines have chosen to cut their flights. Alassane Senghor, Africa Director for the International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, says his organization cannot get staff into and out of affected countries.
It's really hampering efforts. The conditions in those countries, the closure of the borders and all these things, is not helping. So we try to use some creative ways by driving by road, which is costly. Takes time, and of course, it doesn't help anybody.
Humanitarian agencies criticized Senegal when it closed Dakar Airport to UN flights last month. The government here subsequently announced it will open a humanitarian corridor, but details have not yet been released. The West African aviation market has expanded rapidly in the past 5 years, and there are concerns that travel bans will reverse that growth. Companies like Kenya Airways, Eric Air, and Air Cote d'Ivoire have cut dozens of flights each week since the beginning of August. The International Air Transport Association says flights to Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea account for just 3% of annual African carrier revenues. But an IATA spokesman on Africa, Chris Goder, says lost revenue could skyrocket if the virus continues to spread.
If it were to spread to the whole West African region, then that would get much higher, to around a third of African carriers' revenues. So if it were to spread and similar restrictions were to start coming in across the whole of West Africa, that would start to have a major impact on African carriers.
An aviation analysis company, OAG, measures flights in terms of available seats. During the first 2 weeks of August, Banjul-based carrier Gambia Bird flew nearly 6,000 seats to and from Freetown and Monrovia, OAG says. But then Gambia Bird canceled all flights from mid-August through the end of September. British Airways has canceled more than 4,000 seats to these destinations through the end of the year. Liberia's finance minister, Amar Kona, says the flight shutdowns are isolating the country and crippling the economy.
If those interested in investing in Liberia cannot come here, and Liberians who are also interested in building partnerships abroad for their private ventures here in Liberia cannot go, then you have an economic issue.
Carlos Lopez, executive secretary for the UN Economic Commission for Africa, says air restrictions have hit key sectors in the three countries.
A lot of activities that were supposed to take place in the mining are no longer taking place, in agriculture the same.
He says companies cannot get staff into countries or plan for future projects. At a meeting earlier this week, the African Union called for an end to travel restrictions on the Ebola-affected countries. Kristen Roby for VOA News, Dakar.
The World Health Organization says the Cuban government is sending 62 doctors and more than 100 nurses and infectious disease specialists to set up more Ebola clinics in Sierra Leone. Cuba's health minister, Dr. Roberta Morales Ojeda, announced in a press conference today that medical teams are being deployed in October for 6 months. More than 500 people have died of Ebola in Sierra Leone in recent months. WHO's Director General, Dr. Margaret Chan, said what the health services of the four West African countries devastated by Ebola need most is healthcare workers. Chan described the Cuban offer as the first since UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon issued an international scale-up rescue call last week. She also recognized offers to fund more Ebola clinics by the United Kingdom and the United States. Health workers are prominent targets for the killer virus. More than 120 have died, and doctors are among those infected. The fourth Sierra Leone doctor confirmed with the deadly virus is Dr. Olivette Buck. The Ministry of Health planned to evacuate her to an isolation unit in another country. The other three doctors died of the virus. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Eighteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. African countries have closed borders and international airlines have cut flights to West Africa in response to the Ebola outbreak. A South African judge has found track star Oscar Pistorius guilty of culpable homicide for shooting dead his girlfriend last year. And the Nigerian military confirms that Islamist Boko Haram rebels are within striking distance of Maiduguri in Borno State, and would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at African News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. The Nigerian military last night confirmed that Islamist Boko Haram rebels are within striking distance of the administrative center of Borno State in the north of the largest nation in sub-Saharan Africa. Army spokesman Major General Chris Olokulade, the told VOA the militant Islamists now occupy most of the villages and towns surrounding the city of Maiduguri. He said he believes an attack may be imminent. Olokulade said the entire government security system is prepared and that the people have no cause to fear the terrorists. The general declined to describe the strength of the government forces there, but he said, "We're sure the terrorists and their allies won't find it easy to assault this town." Members of the Borno Elders Forum, an influential group of retired military and civil service leaders in the community, have told the reporters they believe Boko Haram now surrounds Maiduguri and will attack soon. Olokulade dismissed the earlier reports as alarmist. Maiduguri has long been considered a goal of Boko Haram as they began occupying other towns and villages in three northern states. Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau has declared this occupied communities part of an Islamist caliphate. His declaration echoes an ambitious declaration of geographic and political expansion by Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi in Iraq. Maiduguri is the birthplace of Boko Haram. The city now has an estimated population of 2 million. That number includes many of the 650,000 Nigerians the UN says have been displaced by 4 years of often unchecked armed insurgency by Boko Haram fighters. A South African judge has found track star Oscar Pistorius guilty of culpable homicide for shooting dead his girlfriend last year, but cleared him of more serious murder charges. The verdict quickly polarized South Africans, many of whom have followed the case closely. VOA's Anita Powell is in the capital, Pretoria, and brings us this report.
After hours of long, often detailed legal explanations, Judge Thokozile Masipa kept it brief Friday when she finally handed down her long-awaited judgment to Oscar Pistorius for shooting dead his girlfriend, Riva Steenkamp, at his home last year. Pistorius said he mistook her for an intruder in the middle of the night and did not mean to kill her. Masipa agreed that he did not commit murder.
The accused is found not guilty and is discharged. Instead, he is found guilty of culpable homicide.
The judge explained her decision during Thursday's proceedings when she said Pistorius was negligent and had acted too hastily and used excessive force. Pistorius stood completely still Friday as the judge finished reading her four-part verdict. She also convicted him of his role in firing a loaded gun in a packed Johannesburg restaurant just weeks before he shot Steenkamp. Masipa cleared him of two other weapons-related charges. The Pistorius family, which has been in the court for months, reacted impassively. Meanwhile, Steenkamp's supporters and relatives wept quietly or stared ahead in what appeared to be shock. Judge Masipa later said Pistorius could remain free on bail until sentencing on October 13th. As the verdict was announced, Twitter was suddenly flooded with angry reactions from South Africans who said Masipa was too lenient. Several top legal scholars took to Twitter and local news outlets to dispute Masipa's interpretation of the case, saying she could have convicted him of a charge just below premeditated murder, called dolus eventualis, which is more serious than culpable homicide. Just outside the court, Trevor Buckland, 50, a pastor of a local church, said he disagreed with the verdict, saying he thinks this was a case of domestic abuse taken to a tragic end.
He knew what he was doing. So we feel the courts, it was in the court's hands to serve justice, and Riva has been failed because Oscar Pistorius is guilty as can be. So it promotes, if as long as you got money, you can kill your wife at home, your girlfriend, or whatever. Promotes that.
But postgraduate student Malaji Foster, 23, says he thinks Masipa's verdict is fair.
I agree with her 100% sure, because if you can look at the whole case, it was full of circumstantial evidence, because all people were not there when the incident occurs. Even the experts, forensic experts, couldn't prove beyond the reasonable doubt that Oscar Pistorius committed premeditated murder.
Pistorius, who shot to fame in 2012 for being the first double amputee to compete in the Olympics, could face up to 15 years in prison for the culpable homicide conviction. Anita Powell, VOA News, Pretoria, South Africa.
The president of the Central African Human Rights League says the death and displacement numbers have worsened since the UN pledged to send 7,000 peacekeepers to the Central African Republic 5 months ago. At the time, the death toll was about 2,000. Since Muslim militias unleashed a reign of terror last March, an unofficial count claims more than 5,000 people have died in fighting between armed Christians and Muslims in the CAR. In April, the UN pledged to send 7,000 peacekeepers to replace 2,000 African Union peacekeepers. The size of the UN contingent to arrive on Monday is less than expected, only 2,000 of the 7,000 promised. A spokesman for the Office of UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said, "We have to knock on doors for troops, for equipment, for helicopters." The UN hopes to send an additional 5,000 in 2015. Prior to the violence, CAR had a population of about 4.6 million. Half are Christians, about 15% are Muslims. Hunger strikes have begun in Cairo to protest 15-year prison sentences for protesters who violated a ban on unapproved gatherings of more than 10 people. The law was passed after then-General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi ousted President Mohamed Morsi and succeeded him in the presidential palace. One of the three men facing 15 years in prison is Ala Abdel Fattah, a prominent activist in the beginning of the Arab Spring. Abdel Fattah was one of the leaders of the Tahrir Square protests that led to the forced resignation and arrest of President Hosni Mubarak in 2011. 22 others involved in a 2013 protest have been found guilty but are not jailed. Khalid al-Bashri of Journalists Against Protest Law told Cairo media five journalists have begun a three-day hunger strike to call attention to the extraordinary law. The Freedom of the Brave campaign said an estimated 60 prisoners are on a hunger strike and have been joined by 70 supporters outside the prisons. There are unconfirmed reports that some of Egypt's political parties will temporarily join the hunger strike. This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
African music?
Music time in Africa.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America, and here is a brief recap of our top stories this hour. A South African judge has found track star Oscar Pistorius guilty of culpable homicide for shooting dead his girlfriend last year. And the Nigerian military confirms that Islamist Boko Haram rebels are within striking distance of Maiduguri in Borno State. Coming up, music from Ethiopia, and in our feature segment, a conversation with Miss Africa USA 2014. I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Time now for the sunny side of sports with Sonny Young. Hello, Sonny.
Happy Friday, Yehias.
Sonny, I understand boxing tops your sports reported this evening.
Yehias, let's begin with boxing. Undefeated American star Floyd Mayweather goes for his 47th victory in a row Saturday night when he takes on Argentina's Marcos Maidana in a world welterweight title rematch in Las Vegas, Nevada. When the two met May 3rd at the same MGM Grand Hotel and Casino in Vegas, Mayweather scored a 12-round majority decision. I asked our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moueta, will Mayweather fight differently this time around?
Oh, Sonny, he has no choice. He must go in there this time and box, really. He must go in there and stay off the ropes, keep the distance between him and Maidana. There's really no need for him to take punishment and prove to the fans that he's a big puncher and all that. There's really no need for that. The first fight was a macho fight, whereby he proved to the fans that, yes, I can take a punch. It was bloody. Whereas the second fight, he will adjust and make it a very, very easy fight.
I know I'm knocking at the door. I know I'm almost 40, but I'm still going strong. I still feel good, and I want to go out there and perform and look well and give you guys what you want to see. The first fight was very, very interesting, and hopefully this fight, this time around, this fight is a lot more exciting. He's always in tip-top shape, and do he deserve a rematch? Absolutely. You know, I commend him. I commend his team.
He can adjust easily. Maidana will just have this one-dimensional style of just coming, trying to knock your heads off.
Let's look ahead to November, Nnamdi.
I'm Manny Pacquiao, the fighter from the Philippines.
Pac-Man against Chris Algieri, undefeated American, former kickboxing champion. Do you give Algieri any chance against Pac-Man?
No, really, because seriously, Sonny, he's a kickboxer, Sonny. And it's a meaningless fight, really. Manny Pacquiao should not really be fighting a guy like that. And you expect the fans to pay $1,700 to see this fight, and this fight is happening in Macau. Easy fight for Manny Pacquiao. Algeria is not a puncher. He will stand in there and fight, and Manny Pacquiao will knock him out, and he will look good.
Looking ahead to December, Nnamdi, Joshua Kloti from Ghana. I haven't heard that name mentioned in a while. Looks like he'll be fighting one of the Mexican stars.
Sonny, that's a big one. I mean, this is the kind of fight I love for my African brothers, because not only the fight, you're going to the bank, you know. You're fighting Canelo, who's the biggest Mexican star. This fight, Joshua Kloto could walk away with more than $2.5 million in the bank, you know. And he even stands a chance of roughing up Canelo and even beating Canelo. So it's a very good fight for Joshua Kloto, and I think this fight will really put him back on the map.
Finally, Nnamdi, speaking of being on the map, some Chinese heavyweights are on the map these days. And you've got your hands in the ring, so to speak, with one of those heavyweights. Talk about that.
Sonny, it's nice to be back in the game, you know, to be back in with the heavyweights. I have Taishan, who I'm part of the team, and they call him the Great Wall of China. He's 7 foot at 300 pounds, and he can punch, you know. In the last fight, first fight in San Francisco, he knocked the guy out with a jab. So we're really interested to see him go out, stay busy. And he's signed with the best promoter in the world, in Oscar De La Hoya. So we hope De La Hoya will keep him very busy.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moeta. Namdi talks about how it's nice to be back in with the heavyweights. Two Nigerian heavyweights, Latif Power Coyote and former WBC champion Samuel Peter, are in the news. First, Coyote. He suffered his first professional loss Thursday night, and he suffered it quickly. Coyote lost to Cuba's Luis, the real King Kong Ortiz, who beat the Nigerian by first-round technical knockout in their WBA interim world heavyweight title bout in Las Vegas. Ortiz knocked Coyote to the canvas, and referee Robert Byrd stopped the bout after the Cuban landed a barrage of unanswered punches just before the bell. Coyote complained afterwards that the referee should not have stopped the fight, but the decision stands, VOA boxing fans. Latif Power Coyote now has a pro record of 20 wins and one loss, while the unbeaten Luis Ortiz recorded his 22nd straight victory. Meanwhile, Samuel Peter is getting ready for his first fight in more than 3 years. The 34-year-old Peter, who held the WBC title briefly in 2008 before losing it to Vitali Klitschko, will take on American Ron Aubrey in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, in an 8-round bout. In Peter's words, "I'm happy to be back in boxing."
Galala. Great show, bro.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Just ahead, VOA's Downtown Brown will have our English Premier League football question of the week.
Hey, this is VOA's Downtown Brown, and we're giving a special shout-out to Ibrahim Nabusi from Lagos, Nigeria, on having the top comment on Question of the Week, which was, do you think Ivory Coast Man City star Yaya Toure will score his first goal of the season against Arsenal? He wrote, he's a great player anytime, any day, but facing an Arsenal side with the likes of Danny Welbeck and Alex Sanchez, he can help his team to defend and avoid defeat. He can only provide an assist if given the chance. We had a lot of people who said no, like Olinka Isola from Nigeria, Joshua Glaboon from Liberia, and Augustine Obuma from United Kingdom. We had a lot of people that said Yaya Toure will score his first goal against Arsenal, like Muhammad Adam from Nigeria, Abu Samuel from Nigeria, and Samuel Chialoa from Benin. And there were plenty of more that also responded to the question of the week. So here are some of the pros and cons for Yaya Toure to score his first goal against Arsenal. Pros: if Yaya plays on the attack side more than the defensive side, I can see him getting a goal, but no assist. If Arsenal's midfield plays outstanding and their defense is above par, I can't see him getting anything unless if it's a set piece or a corner kick. And since Arsenal lost a well amount of good defenders, he might have a chance. Moving on to the game. The game is on Saturday 13th. Check your local listings for the time. Next, we're going to talk about Arsenal injuries. Aaron Ramsey just had a minor ankle injury and will sit out for Saturday's game. Oliver Gerrard is still out with a broken tibia. And coming off the injury list are Karen Gibbs, Mikel Arteta, David Ospina, and Mesut Ozil. And all of them are available to play on Saturday's game against Man City. Moving on to Man City's injuries, Steven Jovetic recently injured his hamstring and will sit out Saturday's game. And also, we'll keep you up to date on all recent injuries. Follow us at facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Arsenal transfer news: Danny Welbeck's first game will be this Saturday against Man City. Man City transfer news. Sagna and Mangala are new defensive additions to Man City. Fernando and Frank Lampard, who's coming back from English Premier League. Follow us at facebook.com/VOASunny. Thank you for listening. And please make sure you leave your comments for next Tuesday when we do another question of the week. Stay tuned on VOA's Downtown Brown. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
The FIBA Basketball World Cup is continuing this evening in Madrid, Spain, where France will play Serbia in the second semifinal. The French are the reigning European champions, and by reaching the Final Four, they've matched their best previous performance at the World Championship Basketball Tournament, which came way back in 1954 when they finished in fourth place. The Serbians have a proud history in international basketball. As part of the former Yugoslavia, they won 5 world titles, as well as an Olympic gold medal in 1980. The winner of the France-Serbia game will play the defending world and Olympic champion USA in Sunday's final in Madrid. I'll tell you how the Americans got there. But first, this important message from a Congolese basketball great.
This is Dikembe Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
You need to get to the net, thanks to Kembe. The United States advanced to Sunday's final at the FIBA Basketball World Cup with a 96-68 victory over Lithuania in Barcelona, Spain. Cleveland Cavaliers guard Kyrie Irving led the Americans with a game-high 18 points. The defending world and Olympic champions also got a big third quarter from Irving's partner in the backcourt, Houston Rockets guard James Harden. Yes, I think it's safe to say the Rockets star exploded in the third quarter when he scored all of his 16 points. Klay Thompson of the NBA's Golden State Warriors Club also scored 16 points for the USA against the Lithuanians. Now, another key player for the USA during the FIBA Basketball World Cup has been New Orleans Pelicans center Anthony Davis. Both he and Harden were also members of the USA's 2012 Olympic gold medal winning team in London. Go USA! Bring us back the gold medal on Sunday. Yes, I'm partisan. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to you, Hayes Wuhi.
Yay, Sonny.
Go USA!
Go USA! Yeah. Listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Friday, Sunny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 UTC right here on The Voice of America. A former security guard left school when he was 14 years old. Today, he is changing the tastes of many Africans in Johannesburg. 2 years ago, Vusi Kunini opened the Kulakanisa sushi restaurant in Africa's financial hub. He wanted to Africanize the Asian delicacy and get more black people to enjoy it. He admits to Darren Taylor that he didn't realize how successful his sushi would be in the final report on South Africa's remarkable enterprises.
Silver blades of high tensile carbon steel flash inside the kitchen of the inner city restaurant as sushi chef Temba Kumalo sharpens them. He says he feels naked without his treasured Japanese knives.
The knives are the only things that make your sushi. If you don't have a knife, you don't have sushi. You have to always have a sharp knife. You have to sharpen a knife each and every morning when you come to work. Sharpen a knife, wash it, disinfect it, everything.
Under a pitch-black wall decorated with golden chopsticks, Kumalo sculpts maki, teardrop-shaped mouthfuls of raw salmon, cucumber, and avocado, surrounded by sticky snow-white rice in a wrap of paper-thin, dark-green seaweed.
Cutting it into four pieces, equal pieces. Done.
Next, the chef manufactures what looks like a piece of bread, topped with chopped raw pink prawns, slivers of avocado, and creamy mayonnaise. Sprinkles of black and white sesame seeds and an auburn-colored sauce complete the dish, called spicy prawn bean curd. It's popular, but Kumalo doesn't enjoy making it.
After stuffing with rice, you chop your prawns, you put mayonnaise, you put your spices, you have to mix everything. I hate that thing.
Kumalo is paid to create sushi art, as he calls it, at the Black Anise, an eatery that's the brainchild of 30-year-old restaurateur Vusi Kunene.
I think what really caught my attention was the lifestyle behind the cuisine. It was the culture. Then I thought
Kunene was raised poor in a village in Mpumalanga province. On special days, he says, his family would eat chicken, but mostly they could afford only porridge and spinach on his mother's meager income as a vegetable seller.
I don't think there was sushi at that time in Africa. I never knew anything about sushi. I mean, I never knew anything about gherkins.
So when you were younger, Vusi, if someone had come up to you and said, here's a piece of raw fish, please eat it, would you have eaten it, or what would you have thought?
It would have been impossible. It would have been very impossible. I mean, I would think, are they nuts? Because I don't even.
His mother died when he was 14. Kunene left school and moved to Johannesburg, surviving by doing odd jobs. Later, he became a security guard and then a waiter in a sushi restaurant. There, he says, he became mesmerized by the process of crafting sushi and its vast array of colors and complexity. He set about learning as much as he could about the Japanese cuisine.
I mean, at the time, the chefs were Japanese or Chinese. We could not speak English at the time. We were not willing to share the information. But then now I started doing my own research, you know, I mean, on the internet and stuff like that, and moving to different type of restaurants. Then actually,
Kunene started a mobile sushi business 7 years ago. He opened his restaurant 2 years ago. His mission is to create sushi for the African palate and to overcome a misconception he says prevents many Africans from eating sushi.
People tend to think sushi is raw fish, which is not. Sushi is a combination of rice and vinegar. That's where the technique is. That's why you can, I mean, actually have sushi without raw fish. Raw fish is just one of the fillings.
As part of his desire to Africanize sushi, Kunene's recipes include traditional South African ingredients, such as springbok and kudu antelope, and biltong, dried spiced meat.
Now, immediately when you talk to an African person and then you're telling them about biltong sushi, I think they're willing to listen. They're willing to try it out. And then immediately when they get into it, this is when you sort of push them into the extremes.
When the Black Anise opened, most of Kunene's customers were white. Now, he says, his clientele is 50% black.
Sushi has become sort of their step of food. It's something that they eat actually three times in a week.
At a table in the eatery, a young man dressed stylishly in a blue cashmere sweater, black pants and expensive shoes, tucks into sushi rolls while working on his iPad. He's Seth Mbele, a digital strategist and one of Kunene's best customers. He recalls the first time he tasted sushi a few years ago and the dish he ate.
Tuna sashimi. I found the textures interesting, I found the flavors interesting. Once you get over the idea of what it is that you're eating, it becomes enjoyable. I'm here pretty much four times a week, I think.
You know, I mean, Kunene says he's thrilled to be changing African eating habits.
And most amazingly, you actually change somebody who has never thought of actually trying sushi. But when they come to the Black Anise and we give them that opportunity to try sushi and we always make sure they enjoy it, then the most amazing reaction is these people become loyal to you.
Kunene is demystifying sushi, making sure it's not the sole preserve of elite, rich, sophisticated people by giving it an African spin. The once poor village boy His taste buds accustomed only to porridge, vegetables, and the occasional chicken is symbolic of a country that continues to reinvent itself. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Meron Woudina was crowned Miss Africa USA 2014 in a national competition last month. Meron proves that the competition is not just about beauty. The fashion model and former college basketball player runs a project to help needy Ethiopian children succeed in school. The young beauty queen sat down with me and talked about growing up in Ethiopia and the United States.
I was born in Ethiopia, came here when I was seven, started school here. My upbringing was very good. My parents did everything for me, went to high school and university here, but they always made sure that I still knew my culture and my language. I still know Amharic. I read it, write it, and speak it very well. I played sports while I was in high school, especially basketball. And then I was always dancing was my other thing too, our cultural dances. I graduated high school from Wheaton High School, and I graduated with over 1,000 hours of community service, helping kids at my neighborhood community center. And then I went along and had a full scholarship and played at Bowie State University. And I graduated with health and sciences. And after I graduated, I started my nonprofit. And then especially modeling, pageant.
Miss Africa 2014. So how did that come about? Was there any, was there a process you went through to become Miss Africa USA?
Yes, a lot. First, you have casting and auditions. You first have to compete for your country first. Every country has to do that. So I had to compete for Miss Ethiopia, USA first. Everybody else had to do the same thing as far as Miss Sierra Leone, Ghana. Everybody has to do that. You first have to get selected by delegation. So semifinals, we had to come out and present your platform and walk on stage. And then we all did that. And then I won Miss Ethiopia USA. And then after that is when I had to compete for Miss Africa, representing Ethiopia in the pageant.
What do you mean when presenting your platform?
Platform. This pageant, as far as Miss Africa USA, it's not just about your beauty. It goes way more than that. She wants to know why you're here. Why do you want to shine light on Africa? That being said, one of the requirements is being forks and what future do you want to hold? You want to work, you want to do in Africa. So those some qualification requirement for you to win and get into the pageant as well.
So where in the United States did this pageant take place?
This year it happened in Bethesda, Maryland, at the Strathmore Theater.
So how many African countries were represented this year?
18.
18?
Yeah.
Wow, that's quite an impressive number. And I'm sure you made 18 friends.
Yes, I did. Oh, it was amazing. Even semifinals, I got to meet them beforehand, so we always kept in contact, emailed before the pageant even happened. So
we have the pageant, and
yes.
Then I'm sure every pageant has a talent show.
Yes.
So what did you perform for the talent?
I did dancing. I'm like obsessed with music, but especially my cultural music. Our dancing is, main dance is called Iskista.
Iskista is a very high caliber, very demanding dance move. You said you grew up here in the United States, and I'm just curious, how did you master the art of the Iskista?
Yes, it's very hard, but I think it's because growing up in Ethiopia, I always watched any clip that came on with dancing, like my eyes was glued to the TV. The house could be burning on fire, my eyes was on TV. That, and then even when we came to this country, I was involved still with the Ethiopian community as far as shows, weddings, everywhere we went. So being privileged enough to be watching the professional dances in front of me, and I'm young, so as soon as I watch it, the next day I was like, oh, I'm trying that move, and I mastered it at a young age. So
after all said and done, you wear the crown, became Miss Africa USA 2014. Yes. So are there any responsibilities that go with the crown, any obligations you have to fulfill?
Yes, there's a lot. One, of course, being ambassador for Africa. So I'm promoting our culture, doing all that. And then the second part, why I even entered this pageant, is not just because, of course, the winning part gives you a chance like before China on Africa. So that being said, I will be doing two things with it. One, showing you guys the good, the culture, the love, the beauty of Africa. And two, other side, I would use this opportunity to branch out. Kids First Ethiopia is a nonprofit that I started 2 years ago. So what it basically does, and when I started, was sending school supplies, shoes, clothes, and everything else to kids that have lost their parents to HIV and AIDS. So next, I want to branch out and have my own established, my own group where I do more than that, where I could take care of their whole livelihood, their education, their life and everything, and basically branch out and change it to Kids First Africa.
So in conclusion, what does the future hold for the current Miss Africa USA, Meron Udine?
The future is very, very, very bright for Meron Udine. I plan to do a lot with this title, as far as mostly on my nonprofit part, and that's why I got into it. So hopefully taking that next step and changing it to Kids First Africa. Next month I do plan on organizing and going to Ethiopia and having my establishment. So I'm just taking that next step and doing a lot for not just Ethiopia, Africa.
Great. Congratulations on your win. I wish you the best.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me as well.
That was Miss Africa USA 2014, Meron Udine. This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Suleiman Tarawale, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
As President Barack Obama said last week, the people of West Africa should know that the United States of America is a full and determined partner in the fight to stop the terrible outbreak of Ebola virus disease. The United States and our partners around the world are working with African governments, hospitals, and especially courageous health workers and ordinary citizens to stop Ebola and save lives. If you want to stop Ebola, understand the facts. Ebola does not travel through the air. Ebola does not spread through casual contact. The most common way you can catch Ebola is by touching the body fluids, such as sweat, saliva, or blood, of someone who shows symptoms or who has died from Ebola. Contact with body fluids or items contaminated with body fluids is how the disease spreads at burials and when unprotected people care for patients at home. If you feel sick with a high fever, get help immediately. Prompt treatment in a medical center makes it possible for nearly half of patients to recover. If you have to bury someone who died from Ebola, it is important not to touch their body directly. You can uphold traditions and honor your loved ones without endangering everyone around you. The United States has provided tens of millions of dollars in protective gear for healthcare workers, food, chlorine bleach, laboratory support, and other assistance. The U.S. Agency for International Development will spend an additional $75 million to build clinics with many more beds, to recruit medical personnel to staff them, and to deliver equipment. The new money comes on top of the $21 million in assistance that the United States has committed since March. Other essential contributions of experts, training, and supplies continue to come from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and the Departments of State, Defense, and Health and Human Services. The people of West Africa should know that they are not alone. Together, we can make every effort to treat the human beings who are sick with respect and dignity. Together, we are saving lives, and we will save more. Together, our countries can do much to improve public health to stop such an outbreak from happening again.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, African leaders countrywide have long sought a solution to the so-called brain drain, losing their brightest young minds to jobs in the West or Asia. Now many talented African students who study abroad are finding opportunities to apply their skills at home. We'll examine a new trend among Africa's top intellectual talent. That's next time on VOA Africa.